Welcome to The Expert Vet. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Donna Spector, who is The Expert Vet. She's a board-certified veterinary internist here to help explain medical conditions in dogs and cats. If you have a problem that's been difficult to diagnose or treat, Dr. Donna can give a second opinion to help you and your vet keep your pets healthy. Email your questions to radiopetlady@gmail.com. The Expert Vet is a production of 8 Paws LLC and Dr. Donna Spector, which are solely responsible for its content, and is brought to you by Canine Active, a safe, non-toxic pain reliever with a proprietary anti-inflammatory ingredient, Alpha-G, made of naturally occurring amino acids and homeopathic compounds known to provide pain relief in dogs without the side effects and risks of drugs. Canine Active is made in America by the company that makes Amino Active, proven safe and effective for people with pain who want to avoid ibuprofen and NSAIDs. Now there is Canine Active, an innovative formula for dogs to improve quality of life for the canine members of the family. Canine Active, proven safe and a proven pain reliever. This show is also brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Can you identify what's on the label of your own dry dog food? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. And their new grain-free recipes give you even more healthy choices for your pooch's dinner. And Donna's dream for a super low-carb canned cat food has come true. Halo's new pate-style cat food has an amazingly low 5% carbohydrates. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they emphasize giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com, because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. Good evening, Dr. Donna. I have a dog in a lot of pain, as I have had for a while, so I'm hoping we can dig into some more of the options for Scooby-Doo, my sweet old giantly arthritic gentleman, and anybody else's dogs who are either on the cusp of moving a little slowly or can't barely move at all.
Right.
So non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, known as NSAIDs, N-S-A-I-D as a as a short. Talk a little bit about those. Have been around a long time, the Deramax, the Rimadyl.
Yep.
People have heard of it. They've also heard bad things about it. What's
right.
the current thinking?
Well, you know, they absolutely have are a cornerstone and a mainstay of treatment. So we've talked a lot about other therapies, you know, like the glucosamine and the, you know, all these joint sort of supplements and
yes.
the omega-3 fatty acids and all these things. Well, when it gets right down to it, arthritis, itis is an inflammatory disease. There is active inflammation in those joints. And you can give pain medicine, like pain control things, like if you take a headache and you take some Tylenol, it's actually just relieving the pain. It's not doing anything from an inflammation standpoint.
Right.
So when you talk about really, truly trying to get control of arthritis, an anti-inflammatory of some sort is really important. And that's what the NSAIDs are, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. They will actually decrease inflammation in those joints. And the goal is that you can use them to try to decrease inflammation, and then your other therapies, you know, will also be in the system working to alleviate some of the pain and discomfort. And you can sometimes minimize or really decrease the dose of the anti-inflammatories or go for a few, you know, for periods of time off the anti-inflammatories before they're needed again. So there's a lot of different ways to use the anti-inflammatories, but joint disease, joint arthritis, there is inflammation and an anti-inflammatory is needed. That's what the NSAIDs are.
And one of the things that I think is something that either veterinarians, not all of them are aware of yet, or they certainly are not communicating it clearly to their owners, is that I've heard person after person, and I was one of them until we started talking about pain, which we have over many months of this show. They've said, try this for X period of time. Watch your dog. If it seems better, good, you're done. Now,
right.
oh, it didn't work? Then try this one alone
right.
by itself. So
right.
people are going through each of the different non-steroidal anti-inflammatories.
Right.
And
they do have to be used individually alone. You cannot use non-steroidals two at a time. You can't use non-steroidals with aspirin. You can't use them with steroids. Those drugs have to be used not with any other anti-inflammatory. But it can be used with a fish oil.
And that's right.
And it can be used with gabapentin. And it can be used with tramadol. And it can be used with Tylenol. I mean, there are other
right,
things.
Right, and it can be used with Adequan injections.
Right, absolutely.
And so, Medicam, or No, Medicam is a non-steroidal, so that's one of the ones that you might use.
But the true anti-inflammatories, and let me just list what those are again.
Okay.
The non-steroidals.
Yep.
Aspirin and steroids. You cannot use any of those together, or you're going to be in real trouble.
So you cannot use aspirin at the same time that you're using steroids.
No, that's correct. And the reason that you can get into trouble is that these drugs affect what's called the COX-1 and COX-2 receptors. And the most of the non-steroidals, I mean, this is pretty specific, but a lot of them have COX-2 effects, and that's what controls pain. They decrease inflammation, and they control pain based on COX-2 inhibition. But the COX-1 sometimes gets affected as well. And COX-1 is a good thing because that's what helps your intestine and your kidneys function normally.
What about your liver?
When we say the gastrointestinal tract, the liver is part of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So liver, stomach and intestine, and kidney function are all COX-1. So some of these non-steroidal products, in aspirin and steroids, they do mostly COX-2, but they can inhibit COX-1 as well. And all of a sudden, you can end up with some kidney problems, some liver, intestinal ulcers, you know, other things. So you have to, that's why they cannot be used together because the side effects are astronomically high.
And what about us hearing, and I'm talking at least 10 years ago, about Labrador Retrievers? I guess it was labs just because there's so many labs in the population who quote unquote died from Rimadyl.
Yeah.
And yet I've had vets say to me, Rimadyl, Daramax, Medicam, they're all non-steroidals. One is no worse or better than the other for the system. Is that a true fact?
Well,
and Rimadyl took the hit or is it different?
Right. So Rimadyl did take the hit to some degree because it was one of the first ones that was popularly and commonly used. It came before many of the others, all the others. And then, of course, labs are a very common, popular breed. We also know that labs, we've talked about how commonly they have liver problems already genetically predisposed to. The percentage risk was 0.05% that if you had a lab that there was going to be a problem. It's actually an unusual drug reaction. It happens in non-lab dogs as well. It's what they call an idiosyncratic drug reaction. So it can happen in other dogs, but you know, it's like very common drug, very common dog breed, very common to have underlying liver problems, and boom, you know, so it became really prevalent in that, you know, in those dogs. I mean, to the point where the veterinary community said, wow, there's an issue here. So if you have a lab, you might want to consider something different.
Even though something different might be still a non-steroidal, like a Medicam.
Right. And now we realize if you've got a lab in general, you want to be really cautious with non-steroidals.
Does that mean that you go for that every 6 weeks liver test really religiously? Because so many people forget all about it. And 6 months goes by and they haven't been back for a blood test.
Or if you've got, you know, let's just use another example. If you've got a dog that has liver problems, let's say there's already pre-existing liver problems, but you've got this really arthritic dog, what are you going to do? You know, that's when there are other medications as well, like using Tylenol. And usually we don't think about Tylenol because it can be very toxic in, for example, cats. You can't use it at all. It can kill them.
Right.
But used responsibly in the dog, Tylenol with codeine is amazing for, you know, if they've got kidney disease or they've got liver disease. These are things, you know, you can use some of these other medications.
I add my Tylenol to the Medicam that Scooby's already getting?
Yes.
So I could have him on, by the way, and this is something that I feel bad that I didn't really realize before, the Medicam liquid that I was using that has now gone up to $140 for a big bottle of it, it comes as a pill form for like 1 cent practically.
Right.
And that's something that somehow veterinarians make available, this liquid, which seemed just great. And I guess originally it was from Britain or made in Britain. It seemed like, oh, this wonderful thing, when really the little tablet is the exact same thing, so, but at a super fraction of the price. So he's on, and many of these older arthritic dogs, I hope those of you who are listening have embraced Dr. Donna's advice about using multiple modalities at once. So he's got the Medicam, except for it's the Meloxicam, right? It's the tablet, and gabapentin, and tramadol for pain. Now, would I add Tylenol instead of tramadol, which is simply a pain medication, or could I add it in addition?
You can use it in addition. And, you know, and again, obviously, blood panels and various things have to be done. But Tylenol and tramadol are able to be used together.
Sweet.
Because they inhibit different things and they approach pain from different ways. Just like you, I heard you mention gabapentin.
Yes.
And, you know, and it's interesting, the pain in arthritis comes from both the joint, you know, the joint
yes.
itself is painful. And you know that when they're hobbling around.
Yep.
But what happens, and we talked about it before, is that the brain, being smart as it is like, oh, wait, I've learned how to become painful. And so even when the dog doesn't stand up and isn't walking on that joint, I'm still going to cause the perception of pain. I'm still going to, even just laying here doing nothing, I am going to tell this dog that he has pain. So there are these receptors in the brain, these pain receptors that get turned on. And that's where like gabapentin and amantadine and some of these unusual nerve pain drugs come in, because they're actually dealing with the perception of pain in the brain. And again, adding those into a chronic pain management scheme can be really, really helpful.
And it's something that a lot of humans
right.
that have nerve damage from whatever reason or are themselves
right.
arthritic, human
right.
doctors are now getting savvy to the idea of adding gabapentin
right.
to the
right.
Advil or whatever else the person
right.
may be taking, the Aleve.
But, you know, a common thing in veterinary medicine is, okay, well, if the NSAID doesn't work, we'll take you off and try gabapentin.
Yes, exactly. That's
like,
what
no,
I'm
no,
saying.
No, that's not how it goes. You keep the NSAID and you add in
that's
some
right.
of these other things, or you keep the, you know, whatever medication is working well, you know, is working, and then you layer on. And I'll tell you, I mean, it does get expensive. And these dogs often are taking 5 and 6 medications to help control pain, but they're all coming at pain from a different angle. And, you know, and that's what's important. And I think we're getting there in veterinary medicine. You know, I mean, it's we're getting to the point, you know, where
of understanding
people,
that it's more sophisticated
right.
and it's important for people to understand that it has to be the amount in the dosage that your vet has said. You can't just sort of try it yourself. Of course, you'd need
right.
prescriptions for most of this. So for the Tylenol, what I need to, what I base it on is weight, which is 100 pounds?
Yeah, I mean, you base it on lean body weight, not any overweight body weight.
Right.
And then
he really
you
is
know,
a legitimate yeah. 100 pound. That's his true weight.
Right. And then, you know, but yes, I mean, just like.
So
you know,
I would, could I add, what would I do? Add one tablet, one 500 milligram tablet?
Yeah, you know, and I'm going to be real hesitant about talking about doses of it.
That's right, because you wouldn't want to do it for me or anybody else.
Right, because it's, you know, it's something we'd need to look at the whole protocol. And,
okay.
and again, I don't want people to think, oh, well, she said Tylenol, so I can
right.
go to the store
good
and
point.
Grab Tylenol.
And that's
and,
why I ask, so that
right.
people don't make the kind of knee-jerk reaction I would. It's like, okay, great. Well, then I have Tylenol in my medicine
right.
cabinet.
Because
no problem.
I will also tell you, I have seen many, many cases of painful dogs come in with stomach ulcers, come in with liver failure and other things because the person at home says, well, I take an aspirin, so I'll give
right.
aspirin. But then they're also taking an NSAID. And oh, by the way, well, I take Tylenol. I'll give Tylenol as well. And all of a sudden they're medicating on their own, you know,
yes.
of their own volition. They're not getting veterinary advice on it. And these drugs have toxicity. All of them have toxicity. Even aspirin has toxicity to dogs. And so it,
and
it's
even Tylenol has toxicity to people.
Sure.
I mean,
so
there are so many people thinking Tylenol is the benign one because we even
not.
Can give it,
it
to infants.
Liver failure.
And they're
right.
dead. And they're literally dead or in the ICU. In fact, I've heard that they're considering removing Tylenol from some human prescription pain medications like codeine and Tylenol, this thing and Tylenol,
right.
because people are taking Tylenol in addition
right.
without understanding
actually,
that they're stressing
happened,
their
it,
liver.
That actually happened this week. The FDA put out that they were removing, I saw a notice come across that they are removing it from some compound drugs
wow.
for exactly that reason. So it's actually happening this week.
So this is all really important for people to understand. All these things work together like a layer cake, like a beautiful
mm-hmm.
7-layer cake.
Right.
But your doctor has to really be aware of what is in the cake and be on top of it. And they have to juggle it so that it, not only is it correct on paper, but then you go in for that blood test and
right.
make sure that everything's stable. We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about stem cell and adequate injections and laser and some of the more a little bit out there things in addition to things that can go down the throat. So we'll be right back after this quick break. We are back. You're listening to Dr. Donna Spector, who is the expert vet, and we are on our pain show number 2 talking about all these elements that can help our painful pooches. So stem cell therapy, I did
mm-hmm.
it. I was grateful that my pet insurance covered it, and it was
mm-hmm.
quite an ordeal. I mean, the dog had to have anesthetic surgery and have mm-hmm. belly fat removed and shipped out to California from wherever you live. That's where it's spun down mm-hmm. and then sent back to the vet, who then injects it, if I have this correctly, mm-hmm. at least in the case of Scooby. It were so great, I did it for Jazzy. It was a short-lived happiness. Mm-hmm. And they got it in the joints that appeared to be the most painful, as well as IV, mm-hmm. so that it traveled through the body. And I understood that this miraculous belly fat was going to go and find the places it needed mm-hmm. to go repair cartilage in the joints that was gone or disrupted. So mm-hmm. talk a little bit about stem cell therapy, and is that still the place it is, i.e. 6 months of pretty dramatic results and then boom, it's over.
Right. So, I mean, you actually had a great description of what you had done. I mean, that is exactly it. There, you know, fat is collected from the belly. They digest the fat away, and then those cells that are left, they're called mesenchymal stem cells. Those cells have these amazing homing characteristics that they, you know, that then when injected into a joint or injected into the bloodstream, they can, you know, find their way to the areas of inflammation and disease and help repair the process. So in general, that's about what's available still. And what you experienced, sometimes there are very long-lasting effects, but many times there's just a few months and things are better, even if you repeat the procedure. You know, you try again.
Which I did. I tried it again with Jazzy because there was still and it didn't make the second time. No good result.
Right.
Nothing happened.
And so what, you know, there can be some really amazing results from stem cells, but what's commercially available right now is really limited. And this is a little bit of semantics, but essentially collecting fat, you know, from the abdomen, the step where they go and they digest the fat away and they're left with these cells and then they immediately send them back and that's what gets injected. That's where the step of what really needs to happen is those cells, when they finally get them digested away from the fat, those cells really need to be put on culture plates and they need to be grown so that you don't just have like a million cells, you have like a billion cells.
Whoa.
And so what, you know, when they digest the fat away, let's just say, you know, I'm just throwing out a number. Let's say you have a million cells that comes back and you inject those a million cells into various places, you're going to get X response. But if you take those million cells and you put them on a culture plate and you grow them and grow them and grow them and you activate them and you make them this beautiful population of what we call homogeneous, all the same type of cell, then you inject those, that's a whole different ballgame. It is, you get much, much better results. You know, the studies that have been done using those kind of cultured cells, you know, the response you can get from them and the effect you can get from them are dramatically amazing.
Isn't that the only way it's being done if that is known? I mean, it's expensive enough to begin with. Whoever right. would spend $2,000 would spend three.
Because that would be like $60,000.
Ew, I beg your pardon.
That's right now, that's the rate limiting step to actually.
Wow.
Because the conditions in which you have to culture those cells and grow them in the length of time you need to keep them and where would you store them.
I see.
And making sure that you know, it's just, there are many, right. many hurdles to getting to that point. But in research settings, you know, they're doing a lot of work at Colorado State, some of the big universities. The things that they have done with those kind of stem cells are so incredible. They're finding that they can have responses with inflammatory bowel disease, kidney disease in cats, which we know
wow.
what a big thing that is, asthma. I mean,
stem cell goes there.
Right. So it's really incredible. Even in the treatment of immune disease, you know, like those anemias and the thrombocytopenias and the joint disease. I mean, so
greedy, but surely this must have incredible information for the human side.
It does. And that's why so far the funding has already been available to do these initial studies. And you know what? In 10 to 15 years, you know, it will be probably very prevalent.
As common as taking a Tylenol. Who knows?
But it's just, you know, getting there. It
yes.
takes time and effort, but you know, there is a lot of really good information that's coming out, and it's very encouraging for these pets that have chronic arthritis and kidney and, you know, lung diseases. And so I think we have, but that's why right now with what's available, it is really amazing, even
yes.
in its own right.
Well, it is, you know, it's an incredible experience as a pet owner to take an animal so in pain that getting up or lying down is a process that requires so much will and thought on these dogs' part, in my case.
Right.
And after the stem cell therapy, they were puppy-like. And it just gives you 6 months of some really unmitigated joy. It reminds me of the movie Awakenings. Do you remember the movie with Robin Williams and Robert
Yes.
De Niro?
Yes.
Where Robin Williams was a doctor experimenting with something that was taking people that were in long-term nursing care who has
Yes.
some kind of illness. I forget what it was. They were basically asleep or narcoleptic, and it woke them up, and
Yes.
they were part of the human race again. And then there was this whole quandary in terms of people. Was this, you know, cruel because they went right back to the previous condition? But it is a moment of incredible joy to see your animal young and almost pain-free and mm-hmm. larky around again.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess it really depends.
And there are some dogs that do have some longstanding results. And
Yes.
so it's something that if you've got the finances to do it, I think, you know.
Or you have pet insurance, which good
exactly.
pet insurance will cover it. Mine did. I mean, so.
And then we also talk about, do you then, as, you know, you're getting down the road, I mean, also keep on the other therapies and discuss, you know, laser
That's
and some
right.
other, you know, so again, it's still a multimodal. It's
That's
not like
right.
stem cells is the cure-all, end-all, for
well,
sure.
And for all I know, I may have backed off on the other stuff.
Right.
Not understanding, because all those things that you're taking have a preventive effect, too, if they keep inflammation down. And they,
right.
in the case of gabapentin, they stop telling your brain, help, help, I'm in pain.
Right.
And
right.
the Ataquan, I had stopped giving those injections because I didn't see the dramatic result I used to. Those dogs got monthly Ataquan injection for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell when they were needing it. After
right.
3.5 weeks, they were getting lamer and lamer. They'd get the injection and they'd be very excellent. And then
right.
I didn't get very excellent results. But you explained that you layer it back in anyway, because even if it gives a 3% help, that's not all that easy to see, it is helping, right?
Right. And exactly, because we know that over time, you know, the initial arthritis insult usually happens by the time dogs are often 2 or 3 years old. And then gradually
Yes.
each year, the arthritis progresses. So the therapies that used to work well alone aren't
That's
going
right.
to always work well alone. But then you just sort of layer in, you know, going back to your layer cake analogy, you know,
Yep.
that's great. And then, you know, and certainly if you're working with a veterinarian that has some stem cell knowledge, because also, you know, your injections are as good as the experience of the person doing the procedure. If they have access to acupuncture, which, you know, or cold, you know, the laser results, because these are the kind of things that will increase local blood flow to an area. That's like acupuncture and even laser. It increases blood flow, oxygen flow in the tissues. That boosts the local immune system, that boosts the pain control features. But again, the results you're going to get are as good as the machine that they're using, the experience of the user. You know,
something that's really come to mind for me, because my own vet very kindly took the training in order to do the stem cell. She was
right.
interested in it. So she'd
right.
never done it before. Now, in that case, the company, which there's only one main company, I believe, that's
Correct.
Doing it.
That's right.
They send the rep out to guide the vet the
yes.
first time, at least. So
yes.
you have the real expert there. He's not a veterinarian, but he's an expert in how
yep.
and where the stem cells put in.
Right.
But the cold laser, I have my doubts about, because a lot of vets are getting it. I don't know if they're buying it for a lot of money or leasing it for a lot of money. And they're basically saying, oh, it's great for everything. And then they have a vet tech who's had, I don't know how many minutes or hours of training, sit there and do it with you. And I'm just wondering how much does it change it?
Right.
To have someone who's just got a wand in their hand kind of
right.
going.
And you're right, because there are, you know, different lasers, there's different
That's
wavelengths,
right.
there's different powers. The user has to understand the physiology, they have to be trained. And there are different classes of laser, like the cold laser. You know, I use the terminology cold laser because people are familiar with it. But that's usually a much lower sort of power wattage laser.
Right.
And it's unlikely to penetrate deeply enough into joint, you know,
right.
to be effective for joint disease. There's something called a class 4 laser, which does increase local blood flow and oxygen flow to the tissues. And then I don't know if you've heard about like hyperbaric oxygen.
Yes,
therapy.
I have. It's supposed to be amazing.
Right. So for a number of different conditions as well, that because it's like that oxygen can penetrate deep into the tissues and boost that local immune pain relieving feature.
I didn't know about it for that. I thought it was only mostly for wound healing.
Well, it can be wound healing. I mean, it's not as useful for straightforward arthritis, but if you've got you know, muscle inflammation or other things. I mean, there's still, you know, there's still some benefits to it, but
A lot of bells and whistles out there. We now have our show Holistic Vets with Dr. Barbara Roll and Dr. Patrick Mahaney. Royal. And we'll be discussing a lot of these modalities there and how to get access to them and how to know that what you're getting is both being effective and worth your time and money. Because it's time, too. You got to sit there for 20 minutes, right?
And there's these cool things now. I mean, if you're a lot of veterinarians, just they don't have the time or effort to keep up with all the most current stuff on all these modalities. There are different pain clinics and in individuals that are like pain specialists that your vet will have access to. They could just make a quick phone call or get on a website or, you know,
that's a really great point.
So, you know, we don't expect everyone's veterinarian to have the knowledge that they need to, but, you know, maybe it would be worth a trip to the local orthopedic specialist to say, hey, let's get you on a new pain control.
Definitely.
You know, and then go back to your regular vet for all the monitoring and everything.
Yes.
You know, this is a good time to, this is a good thing to use specialists for. Everyone thinks, oh, it's just arthritis. My vet can deal with that. But when it gets to be complicated and there's many modalities, it's reasonable to bring a specialist the mix.
Good point.
To do a good pain control protocol, and then obviously follow up with a veterinarian.
Yes, with your regular vet. Doctor.
But it, you know, this is the kind of thing where a specialist can be very helpful.
That's great advice. We've run out of time, but I want to say that even for humans, there are now pain clinics, and people who've been trying to manage chronic pain with their own doctor, if they can get to a pain clinic, there is a much bigger overview, and then you go back to your regular doctor. And I'm excited to learn that this exists for dogs as well. I'm going to be seeking one out for Scooby, if only to pay for them to consult with my vet to, you know, put into action some of your ideas, because it's better for my vet to be on top of it, as it is for each person's vet, to understand what we're asking for and then to find a way to deliver it to us and our pets, because there is relief out there, but it's got many, many colors and shapes, and we want the icing on top of the 7-layer cake.
Right.
Dr. Donna, thank you so much for another great night and all this wonderful advice. And thank you all for listening. Start being preventive with your dogs even when they're young, because as Donna said, this starts at age 2, and our bigger boned, longer limbed, more active dogs, it's even more true for them. Have a great night, Donna. Thanks again for everything.
You too. Take care.
Hey, it's me, Ellen, and if you know anything about me, you know I love my pets. And if you've been reading my diary, you know I had a crush on Donny Osmond. Anyway, I love my pets so much that I'll only give them Halo. It's premium quality, nutritious, natural dog food. Really, read the label and you'll see. Halo is my pet food company, and we care about what's in the bag and what's not.
Halo, the number one selling natural pet food brand, using only real meat, never any meals. Halo is available at Petco, Whole Foods Market, and your local pet specialty or natural food store. Visit HaloPets.com.